لبيك اللهم لبيك، لبيك لا شريك لك لبيك، إن الحمد والنعمة لك والملك لا شريك لك.
ذو الحجة، the final month of the lunar year, the month of Hajj for Muslims from far and near.
A time to fulfill a once-in-a-lifetime obligation and distance yourself from worldly temptation.
In the city where hearts are drawn to the green dome, a place we all wish we could call home.
At the grave of the one to whom belongs the major intercession, you stand in humility and great veneration.
In Mecca awaits another magnificent sight. To one's eyes, the holy Kaaba brings much delight.
When pilgrims flock to Mount Arafat, it's to fulfill the greatest integral of Hajj, in fact.
Upon leaving Arafat and heading to Muzdalifah, together in harmony, pilgrims repeat the talbiyah.
On the evening of Eid, to Mina the pilgrims go. The next day at the three Jamarat, pebbles they will throw.
Returning to the Haram, they perform wudu at the Zamzam well before performing tawaf around the Kaaba to bid farewell.
About these practices, more you'll find out and know by joining us on Reconnecting in Dhul Hijjah on 2MFM Radio.
بسم الله والحمد لله وصلى الله وسلم على سيدنا محمد رسول الله. All praise and thanks is due to Allah. May Allah the Almighty increase the honor and raise the rank of Prophet Muhammad صلى الله عليه وسلم and protect his Muslim nation from that which he feared for it. It's a pleasure to be with you again on 92.1 FM Muslim Community Radio. You've reconnected with Nadia and Ola on episode 2 of Reconnecting in Dhul Hijjah, and we are glad to be with you. Of course, back with me in the studios of Torm FM, Muslim Community Radio, I'd like to welcome my lovely co-host, Ola. Assalamu alaikum, Ola, and welcome back, partner.
Wa alaikum assalam, Nadia, and thank you very much. It's wonderful to be back. I also extend a very warm greeting to all our listeners who are reconnecting with us on this episode of Reconnecting in Dhul Hijjah via 2M FM.
Ola, we've been planning and preparing for this episode for quite some time, and just earlier on we were talking about how lengthy this episode took us to prepare for.
But it's also been a very inspiring journey, because it's something that we've discovered so many things along the way in researching and producing this program. This episode in particular, it's taken us back in time, really.
Absolutely, it definitely has. And especially for you, who, of course, were among the fortunate ones to have had the privilege of performing Hajj once in your lifetime. But bi'ithnillahi ta'ala, hopefully within the next few years, you will re-embark on that journey again.
Inshallah, Jaman Nadia.
today's episode, bi'ithnillahi ta'ala, we will be focusing on something we haven't covered before on Tawm FM radio.
Absolutely. It's, I think, a new aspect or a new perspective when it comes to discussing Hajj and this once-in-a-lifetime journey and the journey of a lifetime, as we so called it last time. Mm. It is a completely different perspective, I think, and one that many people probably don't think about nowadays. But yep. It is still interesting to find out about it. Just, I think so they can develop a newfound appreciation for, you know, the blessings that they have today and how much easier it is actually to fulfill this obligation in today's day and age.
Absolutely. Times have changed, Ola, and the way in which we travel to Hajj has in fact changed tremendously. So in today's episode of Reconnecting in Dhul Hijjah, we will be focusing on how Muslims used to travel to Hajj before the advent of modern transportation methods. So before the advent of technology and modern transportation, things were a lot different, Ola.
A lot more different and a lot more difficult, which is why I say this may just help us to develop this newfound appreciation for what we have today and to really get us back in touch with the fact that, yes, it is indeed a trip that requires a lot of preparation. We are blessed that it is facilitated for us in such an easy way. And we really need to, I think, reflect on how difficult it was in the past for those people to really understand that we may feel like we're making a sacrifice nowadays when we plan for a trip like Hajj. This is nothing compared to what they had to go through in the past.
Subhanallah, I'm sure traveling to perform Hajj in pre-modern times really was, I guess, a very risky trip for most people, and it took quite a long time for them to travel to Hajj. And I'm sure our listeners will be surprised to know that it didn't take weeks, it took months and sometimes even years for them to travel to the holy lands of Mecca and Medina. And if you show people the contrast between modern times in comparison to the history of how Muslims used to travel to perform Hajj, as you mentioned earlier, it would lead them to appreciate what we have today and the facilitation that we have and how easy it is compared to our fellow Muslim brothers and sisters in the past.
And I think you raised a very important point, Nadia, when you said it was a risky journey back in the day. Like, when people used to travel to Hajj, they had this idea, or they had this strong belief that they may never see their families again.
Yeah,
they may pass away on during this journey. They may not make it back because there were so many risks involved because of the length of time that it took them and the adverse conditions that they had to face along the way. Today, while yes, I mean, nobody has guarantees that, you know, they're going to go somewhere and come back. Even if you're flying, even if it's a two-hour trip by plane,
none
of us have that guarantee that we will go on a trip and actually return. Mm-hmm. But it was even more so a risk back then.
Absolutely. And it will be very interesting for our listeners to learn about how it was a lengthy, a risky and a very expensive task. But they were willing to go on that journey for the sake of Allah Azza wa Jal. And it will lead us, as I mentioned, to appreciate what we have in modern times and the facilitation that we have. So that's the topic that we will be covering today, Ola, in regards to the contrasting experiences of traveling to Hajj in the past versus the present. So we will be drawing on that comparison and hopefully lead many of our listeners to appreciate what they have. Stay tuned.
دربو مشيته قلبي انغرم بالحرم لما رأيته يا هدايا بيه والكرم عنده لقيته عنده لقيته قلب غرام بالحرام لما رأيته يا هادي والكرم عنده لقيته عنده لقيته.
دمع بتنسى كب بتكون من السقام مش كل كلمة بتنكتب بتوصل للمرام
من شوق الخير العرب أحمد خير الأنام قلبي بالحب التهب ومدوب من الغرام.
It has always been a lifelong dream for a Muslim to perform Hajj at least once a lifetime. In times like today, we could easily make this dream a reality, quicker than others were able to do in the past. Many Muslims in the past experienced intense hardship on their journey to perform Hajj, especially during the time when there were no trains, let alone aeroplanes.
Many Muslims in pre-modern times made the journey to Mecca on foot or perhaps mounted on a horse or a camel. It wasn't a matter of taking a two-week vacation and then back to the office on Monday morning. Rather, for most Muslims, travelling to perform Hajj was a journey that took several months, if not a year or two. And once the trip was made, well, who wanted to hurry? They would remain in Mecca or Medina for a few months to recover and prepare for their return to meet other Muslims from all over the Islamic world and to study.
Ala, today a person can go to Mecca in less than 24 hours from any place in the world, and that's with the facility of international air travel. The Hajj trip would not take more than a couple of weeks to complete, and one would return to one's home and family, well, in a short period of time.
As travel becomes easier, an increasing number of individuals are able to perform the Hajj every year. Over 2 million Muslims from 183 countries perform Hajj every year, forming the largest single gathering in one place at one time for one purpose on earth.
Last year in 2017, Ola, the 10 top countries who had the highest numbers of pilgrims in 2017 were Indonesia with 221,000 people, Pakistan 179,210 people.
Then coming in at third place is India, where 170,000 pilgrims performed Hajj.
In Bangladesh, Ola, 127,198 pilgrims were reported to be in Hajj.
Egypt contributed its fair share of pilgrims as well, coming in at number 5 with 108,000.
Then came Iran with 86,500 pilgrims.
In 7th place is Nigeria, contributing 79,000 pilgrims.
And what about Turkey? 79,000 pilgrims also.
Algeria is coming in at number 9 with 36 pilgrims having attended the holy sites to perform this annual pilgrimage. So a correction, that was 36,000. I don't think there were just 36 people from Algeria, 36,000. 8,000 that was.
That's right, because Morocco came in at 10th and they were 31,000 pilgrims in 2017.
So if we look at the numbers of pilgrims in the earlier times, they were definitely a lot less than they are in this day and age. We've definitely seen a significant rise from as few as 24,000 in the mid-1900s. So in 1995, and according to Statista.com, about 1,865,234, look at the accuracy, performed pilgrimage. This steadily rose to about 2,454,325 in 2007, then increased to roughly 3,161,573 in 2012.
And then we saw a significant decline in 2013, in which the number of pilgrims decreased to about 1,980,249. And the reason for that, dear listeners, for the decline was based on the restrictions that were put in place that limited the number of pilgrims entering Mecca and Medina. And that was due to ongoing construction at the holy sites and, of course, concerns about the potential spread of Middle East respiratory syndrome. Since then, the numbers have noticeably returned to normal.
And Nadia, although you may think that being a Saudi national, being a resident in Saudi Arabia would give you additional perks in terms of being able to have quick and easy access to perform Hajj whenever you feel like it, that's not the case. In fact, Saudi Arabian Muslims still must apply for a permit to perform Hajj, which is only granted once every 5 years due to space limitations. So part of the reason for the decline in numbers in 2013 was that over 30,000 pilgrims who tried to enter the pilgrimage areas without a permit were turned away by local officials.
Interesting. Subhanallah, Allah, as you mentioned, you would think that if you are a Saudi resident, you would have that capability of entering anytime you like. But there are restrictions put in place.
Something which is basically on your doorstep and you have no access. Access has been denied. But subhanallah, it's for a reason. I mean, there are a lot of people. There are millions and millions and millions of people around the world who want to fulfill this obligation just once in their lifetime.
That's right.
You know, with restricted space. They need to keep these things in mind that, you know, they can't just let an unlimited number of people enter because it does pose other risks.
Absolutely, Ola. Coming up next is a timeline of evolving travel methods. And that's what our listeners have been predominantly waiting for this afternoon in terms of the history of how Muslims used to travel to and from Mecca and Medina.
I hear the galloping of camels.
Yes, we will be hearing a lot of galloping of camels and horses, Ola, and it will be a very historical journey.
So close your eyes. Close your eyes and try to imagine this.
Yes, dear listeners, you are tuned in to Reconnecting in Dhul Hijjah, and we're about to take off. Stay tuned. Undertaking the journey to Mecca and Medina to perform pilgrimage was a major challenge in the past, whereby Muslims used to trek for hundreds and thousands of miles for weeks on end across North Africa and the Middle East, meeting up at hubs such as Damascus and Cairo before traveling as a caravan across the Arabian Desert.
Before the age of air travel, pilgrims used to get to Mecca by boat and ferry. Prior to this, though, people used to journey together in camel caravans and would often stop to trade along the route.
In the mid-1900s, commercial air travel was still in its early stages, and it was not as widely available as it is today. For those who could afford it, they would embark on their journey, riding small planes from nearby countries. Like today, coaches and buses would be used to transport pilgrims from place to place.
During the latter half of the 19th century, when industrialisation led to the expansion of railroads and the increase in efficient steamships, travel to Mecca for Hajj became much more affordable for many Muslims.
The Hajj journey was normally made by caravan from the earliest periods up to the end of the 19th century. A journey through mountain, sea, and desert took several months, depending on factors like point of departure, as well as weather and road conditions. This long journey involved many hardships and dangers like hunger, thirst, disease, exposure to intense heat and cold, as well as the safety risks posed by robbers, which may be encountered along the way.
In winter, the caravans set off by daylight, resting at night, while in summer they would set off following the afternoon prayer and travelled by night, stopping when the sun came up. The places where the caravans dismounted were called manzil. These stations along the route where pilgrims rested and satisfied their needs for water, food and provisions. These rest stations were usually near sources of water, protected by military forces and castles built to provide security.
Unlike modern times, where pilgrims take a direct route of travel from their home country to Mecca and Medina, before the 19th century, pilgrims from various continents or regions would gather at three main assembly points in Syria, Egypt, and Iraq, from where they would travel in large convoys comprising tens of thousands of pilgrims.
The task of organising such pilgrimage journeys was usually undertaken by the Muslim rulers, who would assign personnel, funding and resources for organising such pilgrimage caravans. These caravans included thousands of camels for carrying pilgrims, merchants, goods, food and water. A lot of people also made their pilgrimage journey on foot. The rulers would supply necessary military forces to ensure security of Hajj caravans. Commanders for the caravans were designated by the Muslim sovereign and were known as Amir al-Hajj. They were in charge of protecting the pilgrims of the caravan and securing funds and supplies for the journey. Surgeons and physicians were also sent with the convoys to doctor the pilgrims when needed, free of cost. During this period, it's estimated around 20 to 60,000 people made their pilgrimage annually.
It's proposed that around the time of the father of the Caliph Harun al-Rashid, a road stretching from Iraq to Mecca and Medina measuring 900 miles or nearly 1,500 kilometres was constructed to facilitate a somewhat smoother pilgrimage journey. It was later named the Way of Zubaydah, Darb Zubaydah, after Harun's wife, who was credited for conducting improvements along the route, like the installation of water cisterns and food houses for the convenience of pilgrims.
Although it was predominantly a land journey during that era, many distant pilgrims from Maghrib, the Indian subcontinent, and Southeast Asia had to use various sea routes to reach Mecca and Medina.
Pilgrims from the Maghrib, Tunisia, Algeria, and Libya would travel through the lower coast of Mediterranean Sea to reach and join the caravans coming from Egypt. Some pilgrims coming from Africa would cross the Red Sea to reach Mecca.
Across European colonies, the introduction of railroads and steamships had transformed the Meccan pilgrimage from a small-scale ritual performed mainly by the well-off into a mass annual event dominated by the rural poor who packed onto the decks of Arabia-bound steamers on third and fourth class tickets.
And after the 1850s, steamships were introduced as a new method of travel for the pilgrimage journey, and the number of pilgrims travelling by sea increased. With the opening of Suez Canal in 1869, the travel time for pilgrimage was shortened.
During the early 20th century, Sultan Abdul Hamid II commissioned the construction of the Hejaz Railway between Damascus and Medina, which further facilitated the pilgrimage journey. The pilgrims travelled in relative ease.
The Hejaz Railway was laid as the largest project ever developed for the Hajj pilgrimage, aimed at enabling tens of thousands of pilgrims to make the journey safely and comfortably. The railway project was undertaken in 1900 and made its first run from Damascus to Mecca in 1908. Thanks to this 1,464-kilometre rail line, the Damascus-Medina route, which previously had taken caravans 40 days, affected with dangers and difficulties such as thirst, contagious disease, scorching heat, freezing cold and Bedouin attacks, was transformed into a safe, comfortable and economical journey of 4 days.
But aeroplanes long ago replaced sea and rail travel and transformed the itinerary of the Hajj from a multi-site, months-long journey into a rapid, direct journey between home and Mecca.
After a contract between the Saudi Arabian government and the Masr Airlines of Egypt in 1936, the Masr Airlines introduced the first airline service for Hajj pilgrims in 1937. So strong,
According to one account, during the pilgrimage seasons of 1946 to 1950, around 80% of the total foreign pilgrims arrived by sea, 10% by land, and 7% by air transport. The 1970s and subsequent decades saw a dramatic increase in the number of pilgrims because of the availability of affordable air travel systems.
قصدت ترجو التبرك منه العجم والعرب وطر على ناقة الأشواق في سحر ما أطيب الوصل حظا حين تقترب لكل قلب حبيب يستهام به لكن حبيبي رسول الله أحتسب.
Ola, the risks involved with travelling were steeply reduced in the 20th century and, of course, by technology, advances in hygiene and new administrative methods.
As with all modern travel, the structure of the journey was drastically altered. In a span of 75 years, the old pilgrim routes to Mecca were rendered largely obsolete by steamships, trains, and other means of automated transport. The advent of airplanes a few decades later made the roads unnecessary because by the 1980s, 90% of foreign pilgrims were arriving for Hajj on chartered flights, while overland pilgrims from around the Middle East used high-speed freeways, reducing the desert to a blur.
Aeroplanes made pilgrimage less costly in terms of both the price of travel and the greatly reduced absence from work and family. So the significant rise in pilgrim numbers during the last half of the 20th century can be, in fact, attributed to greater availability and accessibility to air travel.
نفس الفداء لقبر أنت ساكنه فيه العفاف وفيه الجود والكرم وصاحباك فلا أنساهما أبدا مني السلام عليكم ما جرى القلم.
So as we can see, over the years, the methods of travel to Mecca have evolved from caravans with camels to modern means of transport, such as aeroplanes. Now, travelling to Mecca for pilgrimage has become safer, faster, and more comfortable than ever before. This, of course, is all thanks and praise to Allah for facilitating these means for us to be able to perform Hajj.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are tuned in to Reconnecting in Dhul-Hijjah on the Muslim Community Radio 92.1 FM. And that was Travelling to Hajj in Pre-Modern Times. I hope, dear listeners, it gave you a clearer perspective on how they used to travel to perform Hajj before the advent of modern transportation and technology. SubhanAllah, as you heard, pilgrims would cover long distances in buses, ships, on camels, convoys. They would travel long distances on foot as well. And if we compare it to our our modern way of traveling, we have the facility of international air travel, and this has become more accessible and affordable for us.
That's right. And subhanAllah, I just find it so difficult to fathom the idea that there has been such a significant transformation. You know, a journey that used to take months and months and months is now undertaken in under 24 hours from, you know, somewhere like Australia. You can get to Mecca in less than 24 hours, where previously it used to take them months and months. I mean, just we were just discussing how long it took and talking about, you know, all the hardships that they experienced while they were traveling in camel convoys. And I was starting to get tired just talking about it.
Yeah.
Could you imagine, Nadia, how much coffee I would need?
Oh, wow. That's that's if they had coffee during those times of traveling to perform Hajj. I mean, we have everything under the sun, as they say, to help us with the facilitation of travel. But back in the days, they would have to draw water from a well. They would have to fetch their own water and find their own food.
That's
to
right.
To be able to sustain.
And another, I think another aspect to this, Nadia, is the advanced preparation before the trip. We spoke about how lengthy the trip, the journey actually is.
Yep.
But also the preparation for it. Can you imagine having to prepare for a journey that would take you months and months? I mean, we go away for a few weeks and we pack half the house. We take everything but the kitchen sink almost. Yep. But could you imagine how much preparation would have to be done for a trip like Hajj that was going to take you months and months? I mean, obviously there would have been certain points or stations along the route where people would go to markets and replenish their supplies and things like that. But to get you initially through a fair stretch of road.
Absolutely. And there are so many things that they didn't have back then that we take for granted now. And we mentioned in terms of transportation, it doesn't only come with transportation, but also what comes with the facilitation of being in an aeroplane or being in a car where you are protected from the heat of the sun. But for those who had to walk long distances, were actually affected by the sun.
They were very exposed to the elements. Yes, like you say, especially those who, you know, were not covered. Depending on how much you could afford, really, a lot of them, yes, did have to do a lot of walking. And so it exposed them to various risks. And many of them, like we mentioned earlier, did not make it there in the first place, nor did they make it back. So it was a very, very emotional experience, I think, for all involved. It was for those going on the trip themselves and for their families back home where they waited for months on end. Imagine, Nadia, waiting back home. We remember they weren't in an era where they had mobile phones and email and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
These people had to wait. Their families had to wait back home. Wondering whether initially if their loved ones had arrived to perform Hajj and whether they were going to return.
SubhanAllah. And that's something that should really trigger us in our modern day existence. Yes, we do have these, you know, modern day technology and
creature
transportation, but this should be a reason for us to thank and praise Allah Azza wa Jal and to be thankful for everything that we have in the palm of our hands.
That's correct. And Nadia, would you, just looking at, you know, sometimes when we take a few hour flight.
Yeah, we complain
about being jet lagged. We complain about being jet lagged and feeling tired and all my aching bones. Like, can you imagine being on a camel for months and months and months just to get to, you know, under scorching heat and adverse conditions? So subhanAllah, yes, we really need to get things back into perspective here.
We do.
And
we
really notice the blessings that we have at hand.
Absolutely, Allah. And that's a wrap for today's episode of Reconnecting in Dhul Hijjah. I'd like to thank all our listeners immensely for joining us on this very interesting historical journey through the past and how Muslims used to travel to perform pilgrimage. Of course, things have changed dramatically and we have Allah Azza wa Jal to be thankful to. Ola, it was a pleasure to be with you once again.
I thank you very much, Nadia, for your contribution, and I thank all our listeners for tuning in.
Barakallahu fiki, Ola, and until the next time we reconnect on Reconnecting in Dhul Hijjah, please take care.
Labbaik Allahumma labbaik, labbaik la sharika laka labbaik, inna alhamda wa ni'mata laka wal mulk, la sharika
Dhul-Hijjah, the final month of the lunar year, the month of Hajj for Muslims from far and near.
A time to fulfill a once-in-a-lifetime obligation and distance yourself from worldly temptation.
In the city where hearts are drawn to the green dome, a place we all wish we could call home.
At the grave of the one to whom belongs the major intercession, you stand in humility and great veneration.
In Mecca awaits another magnificent sight. To one's eyes, the holy Kaaba brings much delight.
When pilgrims flock to Mount Arafat, it's to fulfill the greatest integral of Hajj, in fact.
Upon leaving Arafat and heading to Muzdalifah, together in harmony, pilgrims repeat the talbiyah.
On the evening of Eid, to Mina the pilgrims go. The next day at the three Jamarat, pebbles they will throw.
Returning to the Haram, they perform wudu at the Zamzam well before performing tawaf around the Kaaba to bid farewell.
About these practices, more you'll find out and know by joining us on Reconnecting in Dhul-Hijjah on 2MFM Radio.